point of origin. That has been a grounding phrase for me lately. Point of origin. That whatever I'm feeling, I need to go to where it started. Go back to the base, go back to the beginning, go to the point of origin. And there have been times that I have been so consumed with my feelings that I have literally had to go back to the physical point of origin. When I entered this life, when I arrived on this planet. And that all started on June 29th, 1981. I'm the first daughter of David and Andrea. And that makes me the sole reason that my parents are together. Lucky for my parents, I was a gorgeous child. I was a delight to be around. Everyone loved me. Don't laugh, I'm serious. Everyone did love me. Especially my paternal grandmother. I'm told that my father was her favorite, so by proxy, I was her favorite grandchild. There's a very specific love that comes from a grandparent. And I only say that I know about this love because I know that there's been a void. I know that there's a reason that she died when I was 4 years old. There has to be. And I don't know if that means that I was supposed to fill that void for my family. I had a cousin tell me recently that maybe my grandmother and I shared the same soul. I don't know. Annabelle Rose Ryan Prosser was born in 1934. And she was the sixth of eight children. I always thought it was nine, but I think it was eight. I'm not sure how many pregnancies my great-grandma had, but I think that she did have eight kids. My grandmother's mother was an Italian immigrant, and her father was an immigrant too, from Italy. Her father died in an Indianapolis jail when she was a little girl. I have no idea what her upbringing was like. I would have loved to have heard about it. But knowing that her father was Irish and her mother was Italian, growing up in a family like that, I'm sure was anything but dull. She met my grandpa when she was 14 years old. And she was a wife and a mother by the time she was 16. She'd go on to have four more children, five in total, three daughters and two sons, in that order. I know stories between my dad and my aunts and my uncle about what she was like. She was a selfless mother. She was envious of the time that her husband spent at the church, which I think affected all of us in the entire family differently. Some of us have resentment towards the church. Some of us have resentment towards him. But one thing never wavered was her love and affection for her children and her grandchildren. And even though I was only 4 years old when she died, I feel like I soaked it in. I soaked it in as much as I could. And like I said, I've kind of had to create these memories on my own. Because I know that when she died, everything changed in my family. She went in for a heart procedure. A bypass, maybe. I'm not even sure. My dad was with her the night before. Everybody was with her the night before. And the next morning when they rolled her into the operating room, the nurse said, "We'll see you in a little bit." And she said, "Yeah, you'll see me, but I won't see you." And the nurse told one of my aunts that after my grandma had passed away. When they got into the operating room, they opened up her chest. And I think that the term was, it was mush. There was nothing to even operate on. Her heart and the valves around it, just, there was nothing to put back together or to correct. She ate what she wanted. You know, she probably had pork and eggs for breakfast in some form every morning. She never drank, not that I'm aware of. But in this moment right now, what if she literally died of a broken heart? She experienced so much, and probably so much that her own children, let alone her grandchildren, know nothing about. That she literally could have died of a broken heart. And I know what you're going to say medically, physiologically. That's not possible. But what if it is? Genetically, right? I know. Her mother lived longer than she did. She has left such a massive void in my family. But she knew she was going to go. She had her hair colored, or she colored her hair. I highly doubt she went anywhere and had her hair colored. I don't know. In my mind, she seems like the kind of woman that would just go to the drugstore and buy hair color. Much like myself, I guess. Almost black. That's what I do. And I don't know if I do that because that's what she did. Or that's what I assume she did. When you lose someone so young, you kind of get to create this idea of who they were or what you wanted them to be. I don't even know what is a real memory and what's a daydream. I don't remember any gifts that she bought me. We never went on vacations with her. But I remember her porch swing. And I think about like grandma arms. Don't laugh. But like grandma arms, like that soft skin on the back of a grandma arm, like wrapping around me. Wrapping around me and me not wanting to get away. You know, like toddlers that age, they're just always wanting to go and go and go. I didn't want to go. I wanted to stay right there, wrapped up in those grandma arms. I wanted to squeeze closer to her. She had so many house dresses. House dresses. I know. How funny is that? I would love to wear a house dress. Just because, you know. I have one of them hanging in my closet right now. It's hanging on a hook. As soon as you walk into my closet. And it's blue with this very simple white floral design. And like this, in this ribbed white trim. And I think that's where it started, probably. I rub fabric together when I'm stressed. I'll just take like the hem of a t-shirt. But when I rub the hem of this dress, I'll go into my closet. And my closet seems to be a place where I feel that I can escape or take a breath at least, and I will rub the hem of her dress. And when I do rub that together, I'm sure that started when I was a kid, and I still do it today. Not publicly, probably. I get a little embarrassed, but yeah, when I'm nervous, or you can find me rubbing the hem of my t-shirts. I know it's strange. There's a picture somewhere of her and her grandchildren at the time on that porch swing. And I still don't know if these are my own memories, or if they're my daydreams that I've turned into memories, or if they're the stories that I've been told that I've decided are reality. It doesn't matter. At this point, I'm not really concerned with what the truth is and what it's not. I feel like I can still hear her say Jessica. She had a very heavy tongue. All of her sisters did. All of her siblings did, not just her sisters. And false teeth. Just the way that her mouth was built and the way that she said my name was very specific. So distinct. And her pronunciation and her voice. Somehow it was like sing-songy. I had long dark hair that went down past my shoulders. A lot of hair for a kid my age, but when you come from an Italian family, you're covered in hair. But it was beautiful dark hair. Much like now, of course. And I assume that she would probably stroke my hair and tell me something. There were two great big trees in the front yard. And the house was stucco. And so on the front porch, there were three huge arch openings for the porch and the stucco. And somehow I feel like she would tell me some kind of story about the cars driving by or the birds in the trees, or I don't know. My guess is, even though she loved me so much, she would probably try to tell me something, make me listen, so I would be quiet for a little while. I don't know, maybe she told me things that she didn't tell anybody else. Maybe I still carry those things with me today. There are times when I can smell her perfume. And that Ivory soap, or Dove soap, maybe it was, I can't ever remember which one. whatever it was, whenever she'd scrub my face, it burned my eyes. I remember that. I remember standing on a kitchen chair at the sink while she washed dishes. And I'm sure she gave me something to do, making me think I was helping. I think she was good at that, making me think I was helping. Somehow giving me a little purpose. I was a busybody, like I said. She was probably always trying to find something for me to do. She'd always have things that we had colored for her, and my older cousins would write, good morning, Grandma, and leave it on the mustard yellow refrigerator that was in her kitchen. For some reason, I think I remember the last time I saw her alive. In my mind, my dad and I pulled up in the driveway of the house on Emerson Avenue. Maybe it was Sherman. I think it was Sherman Drive. Definitely not Emerson Avenue. They moved to Sherman Drive by then. She was standing on a ladder just outside of the carport that also had those big arched stucco openings. And I don't know if she was painting it or hanging a plan or doing something. But my memory shows that she steps off the ladder and I run up to her. And she picks me up and she kisses me all over the right side of my face. And that's it. That's where the memories stop. That's all I remember, and I don't even know if they're really remembrances, if they're true memories. But these are the stories that I tell myself. Because my Nana died when I was 4, and there wasn't any time for memories. In high school, I would daydream about going to her house when I didn't want to be at home. And I assumed, actually, I know, I don't assume. I know that she would do those grandma things, like reheat lasagna, or fried chicken, or whatever grandmas do. She'd tell me less than angelic stories about my dad. And we would laugh. And she would hug me and she would kiss the top of my head. And today I imagine that I would go over to her house with my own kids. I imagine holidays. Still, I imagine holidays and what it would be like if she were there. And Sundays at her house. And how she would love my kids fiercely. And how I would still be her favorite. I imagine the advice that she might give me in my own relationships with my own children and with my own father. Because I remember hearing once that grandparents and grandchildren get along so well because they have a common enemy. I don't think my Nana had an enemy. Obviously, I was very young when she left us. But since June 4th, 1985, there has been an ache in my heart. An ache that seems to grow stronger the older I get. I've always been so envious of people's relationship with their grandparents. That this is just this unwavering, unconditional love that I don't feel like I ever got to experience. I did. I just obviously wasn't old enough to appreciate it or to understand it. So when people talk about that closeness that they have with their grandparent, or when a friend says that their grandparent passed away and how much it affected them, I don't get it. I know how my heart aches for my grandma. And like I said before, it's based on stories I've told myself and stories that I've been told, and looking at her pictures and creating these own little scenarios and memories that aren't even real. The day after my grandma died, nobody told me. And at this point, she'd had, let's see, one, two, I was the third grandchild, three, four, five grandchildren. And I was right in the middle, right? No, maybe she had six. She had six grandchildren. I was the third of six grandchildren. I think everybody was over at our house. Maybe everybody wasn't over at our house. I wasn't sure. I'm, again, a little four-year-old brain. What do I remember? What have I been told? So I don't know if this is a story that's been retold to me, or if this is a memory. I was on my swing set. And my grandma was there. She was right next to me, and she was talking to me. And she was telling me how upset she was that they had cut her hair. Someone had cut her hair, and she was upset about it. So, in true fashion of my of my little mouthy self, I run into the house and tell my mother. Nana is mad. And I can imagine hands on the hips, like, just, oh, was I a drama queen before drama queens were a thing? Yes. I told my mother how upset my Nana was that they had cut her hair. My mother knows that my grandmother's dead. And at some point, somewhere, somehow, she tells my dad that I claim that I had a conversation with Nana, and she was in the backyard with me when I was on my play set. And somehow it comes up at some point. I don't know if a phone call was made or what. But I'm guessing that this little story that I had put together traveled quickly through the family. My mother tells my Aunt Susie that I had a conversation with Nana, and that she was upset that they had cut her hair. And from what I remember, or how the story went, was Susie was flabbergasted because in making the funeral arrangements, she was the only one that knew that they had cut her hair so that it appeared even on both sides when she laid in the casket. That's a story that I feel like I've been retold a couple of times. So like I said, I'm not sure if it's my memory or if it's the memory of the story being told time and time again. But I do feel in my heart that she came to me again, and I don't know when it was, but we lived on the south side of Indianapolis, and I had a bedroom with yellow furniture and white wallpaper with little rainbows all over the wallpaper. And I kind of remember sitting in a chair in my room and her coming to me and just talking to me and me feeling comfort. And my ache in my heart is for that comfort again. I want her to come and comfort me again. Because like I said, the comfort that you receive from a grandparent is not comparable to anyone else. And I've lacked that. And I wonder how it's shaped me. That's a very selfish thing to say, because between my Aunt Susie and my Aunt Karen and my Rosie and my dad and my Uncle John, you know, how this has shaped them to be without their mother for so long. For so long. As you grow older, you hear stories that are less flattering, maybe. And I don't want to even say less flattering. Let's just say more realistic. Things that she did that give me strength. She was a strong woman, and she wouldn't take no for an answer, and she wouldn't. I guess for the longest time, apparently she wanted a wall knocked out and an archway put into her house. I think she had a very specific vision, which I appreciate because I'm much like that when it comes to the remodeling of my own home. And her husband wouldn't do it, and he didn't do it, and he was busy and this and that. So she said, fine. I'll knock out this damn wall. And that's what she did. And of course, you know, she started the demolition and he and the boys, I believe, finished it. She loved fiercely. Fiercely. And whenever I hear someone say that, I think of her, a fierce love, a protecting love. A love that had the power to break her. She loved so much. And it weighed so heavy. The experiences and the hurts and the illnesses of her own children could have literally broke her heart. I don't know what that, I can't imagine that feeling of knowing that you're not going to come back. Knowing that you're going to die and knowing that you're at peace with it. That's, it makes you wonder what was going on. That she was at peace with leaving. It makes you wonder where she is now. As her children and her grandchildren, and I mean even her great-grandchildren, experience this life without her. and how things would have been different if she were here. But that's the ugly thing about what ifs and hows and whens and whys. I'm going to work hard on connecting with her again and feeling that comfort. Whether it's in the dream state or that state right between awake and sleep, or if it's in a meditation or a prayer. But I need that feeling of unconditional love. And if you have that feeling of unconditional love, if that's present in your life right now at this moment, don't take advantage of it. That one person who every time you make the same mistake for the 1,000th time, they're right there. For that person that always knows what to say and how to hug, and even knows what not to say. When they know that you already know your truth, and they're just trying to guide you with kindness and love to what you already know. She was a guide on earth, and I hope that she's a guide on the other side. But I feel this gap between us that's grown. And I know that it's not because she's not there. It's because I've been too wrapped up in the crap of this world. All of us have. Just because she's not physically here doesn't mean that her love isn't right here. That source of unconditional love isn't right there for us to tap into. But we have to be open to it. We have to be present. She's there. She's waiting. Right? Thank you guys so much for listening to Not Terrible with Jess Hooker. This wasn't an easy podcast to do, just because of my feelings of this life and the next life and death. And this was just an open dialogue, things that I needed to say and things that I needed to share. And I appreciate you guys taking the time. This is still a journey for me in understanding where I am and where she is, where everybody is that passes. I'm very open to all of it, but I'm very stubborn and sometimes thinking that I need truth, that I need facts, instead of just trusting what I feel in my gut or in my heart. And being open to whatever it is, that she wants to share or let me feel. But then there's a little bit of fear that what if it's not her? And if it's not her, I have to be open to that too. But I am ready to receive guidance and comfort and love, even if it's not from this plane. I have faith that there's something bigger, that there's something more that I'm here for, that I have an assignment. And maybe she has something to do with it, or maybe she doesn't. But I feel like there's a connection. There's something more here. And I want to explore it, and I want to be open to it, and I want to share it. Because I can't be the only person that feels this way. If you have a similar story that you would like to share, a connection with someone who may have passed, or a connection with someone who's still here, and what their love and comfort means to you, I want to share these relationships. I want to talk more about the people that do make you better, just based on unconditional love. And I feel like we should all take the time to concentrate on those relationships more instead of worrying about the people that don't love us, worrying about the people that don't accept us, worrying about the people who don't understand the concept of unconditional love. Why do we put so much of our energy into those people when there are so many people, past and present, who love us? We have to love us that much so that we can receive that love. Those people that see us at our absolute best all the time. If for just 5 seconds we could see ourselves as they see us, as they saw us, how much more meaningful would our life be? Are you that person to someone? Are you the person that shows unconditional love? If not, do you want to be? And to whom? We all hold that power. And it's a power. To love someone unconditionally, that's power. That's energy. That's movement. That's the Holy Spirit, however you want to say it. The gift of giving unconditional love, that's a superpower. But it's not a superpower that you just receive. It's a superpower that you can cultivate. It's a superpower that you can grow. It's a superpower that knows no limits. You don't have to just have that relationship with one person. You can have that relationship with multiple people. Give people what they need, and you will receive what you need. As you change, the people around you change. That one took me a while. That one actually did take me a minute to understand. And if you're like me and you're a little slow on the catch with that, is that as you change, people don't actually change. Your perception of them changes. And the way that you receive their words and their actions and their feelings, that all changes because your heart is open and you have changed. I know, it took me a minute. I heard that for the longest time, and I was like, I don't get it. And you know what? I got it when I was supposed to get it, because that's how it is. You receive the information when you're ready to receive the information. this life isn't easy. It's not. It's not meant to be easy. I think, was it Buddha? Did that guy? That guy tell us that life is suffering? I don't know. I like a lot of things he said. I'm not on board with that, though. I'm going to be honest. I don't like it. I'm not for it. I don't support it. Mr. Buddha. I'm not feeling it at all. But like I said, I'm very curious to hear these stories. Like I said, whether it's about people that are here, people that have passed, relationships that have shaped and made you and lifted you into the best version of you. I know, you know what? I'm not always about the feel good chicken soup for the soul BS. I'm not going to lie. That's not always my avenue. I did read a lot of Teenage Soup for, or yeah, no, not Teenage Soup. I read a lot of Soup for the Teenage Soul. That's what I did. I did a lot of that. I read a lot of that. But you know what? Maybe that's what's shaped me into this compassionate, caring woman that I am today. That's not true. That's actually not true at all. But the best ways to reach me are through Twitter and Instagram. Those are the best ways. I do have an email address that I need to update, and I will get that to you. But if you guys would just message me through Instagram, I would be very grateful for that. And that is actually the best way to reach me. You've been listening to Not Terrible with Jess Hooker in conjunction with The Chick McGee Show and the Off the Air podcast. You guys, I usually read this, and I'm not going to lie. My phone just turned off and it stopped in the middle. So we're going to start right from where we picked off. Recorded in the Front Room Studios, this has been a Waco production. I'll see you next week, guys.